Okay, I'm afraid it gets stolen.
Generally done
good afternoon,
people,
everybody. We are continuing our board meeting. We're going to start with annual improvements. And the tee-up is going to be done by Leonardo.
Agenda paper 11A is about the applicability of the amendments to IFRS 7 to condense interim financial statements. The issue is whether the new setting disclosure required by the amendments will include any set of interim financial statements or only when IAS 34 requires these disclosures. The issue arose because, according to the transitional provision of the amendments, an entity shall apply the amendments to IFRS 7 for annual period beginning or after 1st January 2013 and interim periods within those annual periods. So some believe that the new offsetting disclosure should be given in all interim financial reports. This is view 2 in the paper. Others think that these disclosures should be provided only when required by IAS 34, because no consequential amendment was made to IAS 34. And IAS 34 required to give disclosure in condensed interim financial statements only when they provide an explanation of the changes in the financial position of the entity, since the end of the last annual reporting financial statements. This is view 1 in the paper. In its March meeting, the Interpretation Committee noted that divergence in practice is expected to arise, and before proposing an amendment to IFRS 7 through annual improvements, the Committee asked the staff to consult with the Board in order to determine what the ISB intention was. In paragraph 29 to 32 of the paper, we describe the pros and cons of view 1 and view 2. We excluded view 3 from this analysis because it's too late to clarify whether the new offsetting disclosures should be included in the interim reports of 2013. We asked the Board whether its intention was to require the new offsetting disclosure in condensed interim financial statements, and if yes, whether the ISB intention was to require this disclosure to be given in all interim periods or only when required by IAS 34. If the ISB intended to require this disclosure in all interim periods, we ask whether the ISB want to amend IAS 34. Thank you.
The photographer is going to take pictures for our annual statement, so I would recommend that you retain your natural enthusiasm. Okay, I open the floor. Tak.
Yes. I think the question itself is not very good. So your question is, what was the ISB's intention at that time? And actually, after that, the environment has significantly changed. So we rather, you should rather ask what is the current board intention. That would be better, rather than asking what was the ISB's intention. That is the first point. And environmental change I would like to mention is, you already mentioned in paragraph 29. Paragraph 29. So actually scope has significantly changed. And FASB changed their scope. So as long as scope is different, in a sense, value of this information is not the same as we discussed at that time. And also, regarding IAS 34, if we go down the path of changing the IAS 34, it would change our concepts of IAS 34. So if I were asked what is the current board inclination, I would choose a view 1.
Philippe?
Well, I think regarding the three views, I think it cannot be view 3. I mean, we never require disclosures only for 1 year and transition and say it's not necessary after. It's a pervasive difference between US GAAP and IFRS, and we have tried to converge the standards. We did not succeed, and we say in lieu of that, we will require disclosures that over time will permit comparability. So it cannot be view 3 that would apply only in the first year. So it is either view 1 or 2. I'm not sure we can really conclude from the board's discussion at the moment. At the time, I don't have any recollection of having discussed in sufficient detail this matter to decide whether we intended to be every type of interim or only full interim. So it's not really, it's difficult to as Tak said, to decide on the basis of what were the board's intents. And I think we have to make a choice now, and without any regard to whatever has been discussed or not discussed. I think it's more not discussed at the time. On whether or not it should be disclosed in every type of condemned interims or in only in the full interims, I think it really depends if the amounts are displayed prominently on those financial statements that are published. If they are published to such an extent that you don't see the amounts to which the disclosure would pertain, I don't see the benefit of a disclosure for something which is not shown. And because you have to start with opening balance sheet and the reconciliation ends with closing balance sheet, if you don't see those amounts on the balance sheet, what's the point of having a reconciliation? Now, the question is, should we require that those amounts to which the disclosure pertains should be always presented? If they are material, presumably it would be presented. If they are not, it would not be presented. And if they are presented because they are material, should we require then the disclosures to be there? I think so, because you can't really interpret this amount, which is presented, without having the disclosure. So I think the decision tree would be either a presentation on the interim financial statements. If so, yes, we have to disclose. If it is not presented, what's the point of disclosing information about the amount?
Patricia?
First, in response to Tak's point that the FASB changed the scope of their table, I don't think their scope change, first of all, was significant, and secondly, the intention was never to reconcile from IFRS to US GAAP or vice versa. It was to reconcile, in our case, from a gross to a net presentation, and in their case, from a net to a gross presentation, because we had differences in our financial instrument standard anyway. You could never reconcile just gross to net. So that's my first point. My second point is that language similar to what's in the final standard was in the exposure draft, and it went through the exposure process, and I understand from the staff, and they can correct if I'm wrong, that there were no significant comments during the exposure period on what we were proposing. And so I'm a little bit mystified as to why people are confused about what we're saying now. And to me, it's pretty much black and white. You provide these disclosures in interim financial statements, whether they're full or condensed.
Maybe I could just respond in terms of what was exposed in the comments that we received. I think, unfortunately, you're right. We did expose wording which is very similar to what's in the final IFRS, but there were differences of view that came up in the fatal flaw process, actually, very late in the piece, about what those words actually meant. And the observation was made in that process that if we had meant that an interim disclosure was always required, the exposure draft should have proposed amendments to IAS 34, and we hadn't proposed amendments to IAS 34. So that's where the issue first came up in the drafting process. And so given that we hadn't exposed explicit consequential amendments to IAS 34, we took the view at the time that all we could do was finalise wording that was very similar to what was in the exposure draft. Now, that was different to the path that the FASB took, which is relevant here given it's a joint project. The FASB actually did make an explicit change to their interim requirements to mandate an interim disclosure for these requirements, but they knew in finalising the project that we were taking a different view and we weren't making an explicit change to IAS 34.
But, Sue, you're saying this was intended, that there should be a disclosure?
I think in the staff's mind, when we put the document out, we thought that the intention was that interim disclosures would be required. But to Philippe's point, we went back and listened to the tapes when we were trying to work out what to do when we finished the drafting, and there wasn't actually a very explicit discussion about the timing of the disclosures, which was why we felt we couldn't change 34 then. Having said that, obviously, if the board now thinks that we should have changed 34, we can expose that for comment now and rectify that.
Can I respond to Pat's point? Yes. Pat said it's not a significant difference as far as scope issue is concerned.
I didn't think the change that they made was a significant change to their scope.
I don't think so. It's a big change because actually coverage itself is quite different. FASB eliminate the nuisance of account payable and receivable of common trade, common transaction. That means they focus on the, this is the derivative and the repo transaction only. But if we include account payable and receivable, then population and coverage is, includes all the industry. But FASB focus on very small, narrow industry. And the intention of this IFRS 7, maybe intention was to narrow it to the derivative and repo transaction only. But we didn't do that because we couldn't follow up because of the due process period was not enough. So then now coverage is quite different. So the scope difference is huge, I would observe.
Follows a little bit on from what Sue was saying now, and I think to an extent what Patricia said. My reading of the question as it's phrased at the moment, what was the board thinking at, or what was the board thinking at when we originally wrote this, had two things in it. The first one is that when we have chosen from time to time to do something about interim reporting, we choose to adjust IS 34, and we see that as the standard because it needs to fit within the principles of it. If we look at the similar discussion we've had around revenue and IS 34, it's been an extensive and quite extensively debated issue to decide how we should change 34 and how it should fit in with the context of 34. So it felt to me like this was not something that was being not debated at all or covered in from a fairly light perspective. The second component for me that was important about what our thinking was at the time was that this sits in a paragraph that deals with transition. So it seems like at the time we were thinking about this in the context of transition rather than the context of a long-term thing. The third element that I'd add just from a general perspective is that this feels to me, looking back and looking forward, as a very odd time or very odd item for us to specifically have isolated and say we're going to create an exception for IS 34 for this item, but not for numerous other items in the financial instrument space. So generally, if I'm talking about what I perhaps personally was thinking at the time that we signed off on this, I would not have seen this as a long-term amendment to 34 or a long-term amendment to interim reporting. If it was, I would have looked hard to try and put it into 34. And I certainly wouldn't have seen its inclusion in a transition paragraph as indicating it was meant to be a long-term change. In terms of Tuck's point about what we feel right now, well, maybe we do think this right now should be in the context, it should be in interim reporting. But if that's the case, I think it needs a lot more elaborate discussion because I think breaking the general principle of what 34 is about and what 34 is trying to achieve feels to me like something that we should be doing. We should be thinking about a lot more generally than just as one specific example. So directly answer your question, I don't think we were seeing this as a permanent part of interim reporting.
Can I ask Darrell a question? When I read IS 34, paragraph 16 and paragraph 23, which deals with specific disclosures related to changes in interim periods as well as materiality, and I read that in the context of the guidance in IFRS 7, I don't see how you could reach any conclusion other than the fact that the board intended to have these disclosures in interim reports. I just don't see how you could come to any other conclusion. And I think coupled with the comments that Sue made, which was we overlooked putting a specific amendment, a consequential amendment to 34, we felt this was sufficient to get us there. Couple that now with the fact that this is a crisis-related project, a set of disclosures which we felt were very critical to get into the marketplace. I just don't see how you can come to any other conclusion.
The thing about it for me is that 34 is about, 34 and reading the paragraphs you read, 34 is about identifying when there are material changes from and presenting those. Interim reporting is meant to be a shorter version of the total reporting. And so it's only very limited occasions that we look to add additional things into IS34 that are mandatory. Now, I agree with you this is important, but 34 would already require you to report it if there's a significant change subsequent since year end. What we're talking about now is we want to make this mandatory disclosure. And there's lots of other things that are not mandatory disclosure that are financial crisis related that we don't require reporting on.
I understand, but we put this into the document and we said we wanted it to be in the interim reports. The 34 consequential amendment, in my opinion, was an oversight. And we, in fact, acknowledged the fact that we received this comment. We felt it was late in the game. And we decided not to make that because it would have delayed the completion of the project.
But then there are two oversights. We made the oversight, in fact, three. We didn't discuss it in any big way in the meeting. We didn't put it into 34, and we stuck it into a transitional paragraph. Now, the problem is if I add up those three things, it tells me that it wasn't necessarily an oversight, or the oversight was putting it in rather than where we put it.
But I don't think it counters the original intent. That's my point.
Martin.
And I was not a board member when that was discussed, but I'm wondering why that should be really disclosed, and in any cases in interim, even if we don't see material changes. So I really don't understand the discussion, because I think the basic principle here is, okay, I think in this disclosure is to show, okay, what are the differences between a cross and a net in guiding of balance sheet presentation. And if that really changes material, man, IS34 gives sufficient guidance. And why should we, even if we have not material changes, to do this disclosure every quarter? I don't understand that.
Steve? My recollection of the discussion was more consistent with Darrell's. I thought the reason we put that in was because we were concerned that we wanted to have this in the public domain as soon as possible. So rather than waiting for the first annual period, let's have it in the first interim period. So I didn't recall that the board intended to change 34 to insert these disclosures.
Tashin wanted to come in again?
Yes, I just wanted to say that my recollection of at least why I thought it was required interim is because when we were doing the offsetting project, we were told over and over and over again by everyone, we don't really care whether you come out gross or come out net, just come out the same so there's a level playing field. And when we didn't come out the same, we said we've got to do something because that's all we were asked for, was to create a level playing field. Therefore, we will do these disclosures so you can see gross and net. And investors look very closely at interim reports, and they're going to want to be able to look gross and net at an interim just like at annual. So I always thought we meant interim.
Waco?
Because you have to have a level playing field at the interim dates as well as the annual dates.
Now, I have two comments on, one on general, another one specific to this project. Generally, you know, every time when we discuss interim, I will ask questions, you know, should we, you know, specifically discuss or not? And in my mind, you know, if there is no additional requirement or necessary deletion of a general requirement, we should not discuss 34 issues at all. But you know, obviously our experience shows, you know, we have different, you know, patterns in the past. And I would prefer as a general principle, because we face such kind of problem again. You know, in revenue standards we discuss, and board members may have different views. And I said, in the future we should have a general, you know, policy about this. That is, if there is no changes related to 34, we should assume general principles will be applied. Otherwise, we have to debate again and again. As to this one, I didn't remember we discussed specifically because we are pattern different. And I'm not sure from, you know, Patricia or from Steve or from Martin's, what Martin said, you know, if follow general principles of 34, should we require disclosure if there is significant changes or not?
34 already requires, if there are significant changes, you must disclose.
It is about, do we want to have it in any circumstance? In every circumstance.
So this overrides 34.
I think there are, obviously, people have different recollections or no recollections at all about what happens and what we try to decide at the point. So I think now the question is, do we want here an override of 34 and do we want to force them to... give these disclosures every inference statement, yes or no? That is basically the question.
Which the FASB do.
Yeah. Even not significant.
Even if not significant.
Well,
yeah.
Not significant. If that's significant change.
But their approach to interims to give completeness, their approach to interims is different to ours. So it would be different to our usual style with 34, but it is true that in the context of this project, they did make a specific requirement that these disclosures be provided.
Well, I must say I find one of the biggest frustrations of all these, of the whole convergence project is that we didn't get convergence on this one. It's just terrible that... European banks, or let's say American banks, look 30%, 40% smaller than they are compared to European banks. And I think it is very important information to investors to be able to look at this, and probably also in a on a quarter to quarter basis. I mean, I am instinctively very much against dressing up the interims with all sorts of information, but this is really, really important information. And if the FASB do it, I think we should give investors this information on a quarterly basis as well. That's my opinion.
I think that was the spirit of what we had at the time. That we should make this comparable information.
Exactly.
But if that is the case, the scope must be comparable. Now, it's already scope is different, then we have to address the scope issue at the same time.
You're not comparing like with like anyway anymore.
So the information is useless now.
Yeah.
So what's the point of disclosing?
Well, the scope for the key things that caused the project to be open, which is derivatives, etc., is still the same. You're right that for corporates the scope's different, but the sort of eye of the storm, if you like,
yeah,
for comparability would be the same.
Yeah, but yeah, I understand that. So for the financial institution, it's almost the same. So I think if we ask to disclose, so then the information has a value. I agree with that. But, you know, in order to achieve that, are we requiring, millions of corporates, not millions, 100,000 of corporates to do the same thing? So that's ridiculous. So we have to address this issue if we go down the path of interim disclosure.
I would also add a point to that we are requiring in that circumstance a lot of companies to do reporting in order to be comparable to the US
yeah.
on a quarterly basis, even if there is no reason for them ever to be compared to US
yeah.
companies. And that's the additional concern.
I think Tuck has a good point, but yeah, here you see that one thing leads to another. But obviously, this is, if it were only corporates that we're talking about, we wouldn't bother. That's not what's interesting here. And if it gives excessive baggage to them, I would be in favor of not doing so and scoping that out as well. But I don't know if that entails a whole new work stream. But the existing 34 would give you the information if there's been a change. So, I mean, the philosophy of IS 34 is it's showing changes from the annual. So the information's still there in the annual. If there hasn't been substantial change, you can still get back to it. So I'd be very hesitant of fiddling with IS 34.
And what do you... I mean, these derivative portfolios are rather fluid, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, would there be, in most cases, a significant change forcing them to disclose anyway?
To be honest, I don't know enough about how they make that assessment, and because I suggest not. Martin Edelman's shaking his head, and he'd know better than me.
There is not such a big move between, really, on a map, on a cross basis, from interim to interim. It is not significant.
Individual items might change, but in aggregate, there's probably...
Aggregate, not. And in addition, many banks really already in their disclosure put any kind of leverage ratio every quarter, so this information is out. Okay. It was, I think, it was really relevant because at the point in time when the standard was, I think, finalized, okay, that was not any transparency, how to compare U.S. banks with European banks, I buy this point. But I think now any analyst, investor has this information and can see it in the annual reports. But why updating that every quarter? I don't understand that. If there is not material changes.
Yeah. Well, I suppose these are good arguments. Yeah. Mary?
Just a comment and a suggestion. The comment is, I think IS 34, just back to how it's read and how the disclosure requirements in paragraph 16, and I forget the number of the other one, is that, they do focus on changes rather than material items. And the other thing is that I think 34, very in a way that's very similar to the SME standard, people think of it as a standalone document. So, you know, having a comment that is in IFRS 7, I think most people would not read across as being part of 34. So if we want to require the disclosure, then I think we do, you know, every time the amount involved is material as opposed to there's been a significant change, I think we'd have to amend 34. To get that to happen. Listening to the discussions and the concerns and remembering that Leonardo's bringing to us because IFRIC was asking, I guess, what our intention was so they could figure out how to move forward. Maybe the feedback we give is, mixed views on, original intent is context, but concern, interest in getting this particularly for financial institutions because of the original objective of the project, maybe asking the interpretation committee to think about what kind of amendment to 34 might be appropriate, and maybe there's something in terms of scope that comes in terms of what kind of amendment you might make to 34 that limits what the disclosures are, but give them a bit more information and analysis of what the scope differences are.
I think we should give them a very clear answer, to tell you the truth. Yes or no. That's what we should do. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we just play the ball back. I don't like that. We do that too often with IFRIC.
Yeah, the question that came was very much a case of, is it required in every interim, not what is required?
Yeah.
Well, I must say that Martin's arguments have made me change my mind. Let's see what the leanings of the board are. Do first those who think there should not be an obligation for interim disclosure.
Should be within the IS 34.
Should not.
Should not be, rather.
Not be.
12. Can I ask a question? In assessing the issue of materiality, Ian and a number of other board members have focused on the concept of change from the end report. But when you look at the definition of materiality in 34, it's broader than that. And it focuses on what a prudent investor would otherwise take into consideration in making their investment decision. Now, that's going to include the size, the magnitude of these portfolios of derivatives that they have, irrespective of whether they change. So if in the case of, say, Deutsche Bank, let's say you have $1 trillion of derivative assets and you have 900 billion of derivative liabilities, order magnitude. And these are the kinds of numbers we're talking about here for the 15 or so banks who play in this marketplace. Would that not always be material And would that not always be of interest to an investor? I would conclude the answer is yes. So irrespective of the vote that was just taken, I think IS 34 for those kinds of entities would always scope these in, even if there was only $1 of change from period to period.
Well, in that case, we certainly took the right decision.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Okay, we'll report that back to the Interpretations Committee.
Okay, thank you.
Next patient.
We're going to start with 10B.